I think the answers that you all just gave were really of serious importance because so many questions came in during that, and then persons are not messaging saying, okay, I think you've answered the question. Because there are a lot of individual specifics, but I think if you think generally across the board, if you're doing a home project, you are not engaging in contact with the public, then it is okay. Otherwise, it is not. There are some anomalies that I would try to draw instead of the specifics. And I believe from the response that you gave, I'll try to answer some questions to see if we are on the right track. So I want to ask if I can open my pawn shop. I believe that is a no. But then they're
That's a
asking
no.
here about the hardware store because they're saying, you know, you get burst pipes, clogged toilets, and so on. What about hardware stores?
Hardware stores are also a no. And we understand, I mean, somebody said we should keep hardware stores open because they also sell alcohol, okay, and disinfectant. But we are opening those businesses. We're allowing those businesses to open that cater to certain categories. Provision of health care is one, okay, and I think that makes perfect sense. Nobody would have any difficulty with that. So pharmaceutical manufacturers, pharmacies, they can open. People who produce food, because Barbadians have to be nourished and eat during this time. So we're allowing any enterprise that produces food to open. Okay?
What would you
We're
advise
allowing,
people that are concerned about the burst pipes, especially with the drought we go through and so on? How should they address that?
Well, I'm afraid, listen, this is a difficult thing. Everybody's going to have to suffer. If my car tire bursts tomorrow or bursts today, I have no way of fixing it because the car tire people are closed.
Close.
Okay? Now, as Attorney General, I am dealing with exemption. And some individuals in the motor vehicle industry have written to us for an exemption because they do work for the fire service, because they provide things to the ambulance service. Those are essential services. And I suppose somebody would think that if I provide something for the ambulance service to keep them going, we should be exempt. But you know what? We are prepared to give exemptions if something urgent arises so that you can fix that need. But I can't allow a motor vehicle business to open just because among the million things they do, they also provide parts for ambulances.
And the other thing is, let's get real. If you do too many exemptions, it defeats the purpose to start with. You have too
Exactly.
many people out.
I'm dealing, I've got certainly probably about 200 requests for exemptions in the last 24 hours.
Only?
I've No, the last 24 hours.
Yeah, well,
It's
still.
been over 40 hours since the PM made the announcement. Everybody wants to find a reason to be open. We just can't have that. And we are saying that if there's a situation at the hospital, if there's a situation in the ambulance service, if there's a situation that will affect how the police function and respond, we will give exemptions limited to those things alone. We give
Corey, a
exemptions
quick comment
to
from me,
facilitate
if you
feeding.
don't mind.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Carter.
And I want to quote something because a lot of people are concerned about the economic fallout, and the government is sensitive to that. I think the government has demonstrated that there is a measure of sensitivity in respect of the consequences of some of these things for persons, for ordinary persons. But I want to quote something from President Akufo-Addo, the president of Ghana. We know how to bring the economy back to life. What we do not know is how to bring people
People back
back
to
to
life.
life.
Hear, hear. Hear,
That's
hear.
it.
Powerful statement. Powerful statement. Let's go back to the lines and then we'll try to plow through the Attorney General over 200 exemption applications here alone. Brassat Sunday, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is David Ellis speaking. I have two questions here. One relates to the numbers that have been given on the 33 positives. Now, some time ago, Mr. Carter, you said to us on Brastat that you would have triggered the stage three if we found one tertiary level case, and you defined what that meant. So One question is, of those who have tested positive, how many fall into this tertiary level stage? And when we look at the numbers, what do they tell us about the rate of spread in Barbados and where this trend is likely to take us? So you can take that. And then there is a question from someone who operates a bakery that provides bread for the essential services, and their production is done early in the morning. They want to know what provision can be made for drivers that collect for the bakeries at around 4 in the morning, and they have to transport the people to work. They want to know, is there a sticker or something that can be used to facilitate those persons? So those are the two questions that I have, or two sets of questions that I have for you.
If I can just give a quick response, I know the chief medical officer will have the specifics in terms of the nature of the cases themselves. But in some respects, this is almost academic because stage three has been triggered, and in fact was triggered even before we reached the other definition that we had imposed on this, which is 25 cases in terms of the numbers. And we have been consistently aggressive in our response and triggering stage three even before we had reached the definition of stage three in terms of the number of cases was done because we have seen very clear evidence of what has happened to those countries that waited. We've seen clear evidence of countries with healthcare systems much more extensive than ours to the point of being overwhelmed. We've seen an explosion of cases in many places where the number of cases have doubled and tripled over the course of 24 or 48 hours. So in a sense, we triggered stage three even before we got to the point where we had reached 25 cases because we wanted to keep ahead of the epidemic.
If I may add, Ms. Ellis, the stage three was also defined as community spread. And when I gave the total number of cases that we've identified in Barbados, I would have mentioned that out of the 33, 19 cases were imported. And these are usually persons who reside in Barbados who traveled overseas and came back and became symptomatic, and we therefore had reason to test them for COVID and they were positive. 11 cases are through contact tracing, so persons who came into close contact with those index cases. We have 2 cases that are still being investigated. What we don't have is evidence of community spread at this point. So when you made reference to the tertiary level spread that Mr. Carter had previously mentioned, that's what we're talking about. Community spread, we do not have any numbers to or any indication that it is happening. We believe it's happening or it could be happening, and that's why we're looking for it. So we encourage people. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I mean, you go ahead and finish, Anton. I'll speak after you.
Sure. Right. So from a surveillance standpoint, we are constantly reviewing our criteria for testing because we want to find as many people as possible. And this is public health at its finest. The earlier we find cases, the sooner we can contain the spread by isolating those persons who are diagnosed with COVID-19. I can't, however, say that the 33 represents all of the persons with COVID. I cannot even tell you if it represents just a small proportion of the persons with COVID-19. But we are looking for it aggressively. We want people to come forward who have respiratory symptoms by calling us at the hotline, by calling the healthcare provider. Healthcare providers consult with us at the Ministry of Health, and we made a determination if this person should be tested for COVID-19.
Corey, if I can weigh in on this matter, you'll know that the first trigger to get to phase three, I think, one of the triggers is more than 25. At the time when the Prime Minister sought Cabinet's approval to take these measures, we were at 24. So there's no doubt that we had not yet passed that numerical threshold. But it was a judgment call that we had to make. And that judgment call revolved around a question of, is there any advantage to waiting for another 2 or 3 days or 4 days or 5 days till we check all of those stage three boxes? Or is it more strategically important for our Barbados to get ahead of this disease, in which case we take strict measures but at an earlier stage than perhaps other countries might have. This is not the kind of exercise that you can carry out with a foot ruler or measuring stick, or on a strictly numerical basis. Those numbers are for guidance, and we are happy to have them. But for us, it became a judgment call, and that judgment revolved around whether we take steps earlier or do we wait until we can check all of the stage three boxes. And I think we made the right decision. As far as the question on bakeries, I'm sorry?
Go ahead to the question on bakeries. I just have one follow-up on that other matter. Go ahead.
As far as the question on bakeries go, we recognize that bakeries have to start earlier, and therefore we have allowed bakeries as a standard to operate from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. We hope that people will honor the spirit of what we're trying to do and try their best to work within our time, within the time that we've stipulated. One of Barbados's largest producers of food, as difficult as it will be for them, they're accustomed to having a 24/7 operation, and they have said, in these circumstances, I'm going to function within the 8 to 5 timeline that you've given. It's going to cost us money, but the interests of the country are paramount.
In order to start at 6, they're saying their drivers need to be on the road by 4 to collect the workers.
So let's make this clear. When we say that a bakery is allowed to operate between 6 to 6, we are not telling a bakery that they must start at 6. They can say, we're going to tighten our time and start at 7 or 8. Mm. What we're saying is we're giving you a beginning point and we're giving you an end point. Mm-hmm. But to come to the point, we recognize that in situations, if we give you a 6 o'clock start time, I would hope that the bakery would say, okay, we can't, you know, my employees can't get there on time, so we're going to start at 8. Maybe we'll not produce all of the variety of bread that we would normally produce in normal times. Maybe we'll just stick to salt bread, sandwich loaf, and currant slices. They're decisions that we all have to make, and we want people to work with us. In a situation where there's no helping it, and the bakery absolutely must start at 6, then they can ask for an exemption to permit certain people to be on the road earlier. But in cases where I'm giving exemptions, in every instance, we are asking those businesses, how can you scale back? If you're going to get the benefit of an exemption, you're going to have to scale back. So some manufacturing companies have got exemptions, but on the basis that they move their staff complement from as much as 50 down to 10. Others, they've been asked to move their staff complement from, some have agreed to move it from 30, and they say we will run our shift on 9. So it's not just about asking for an earlier time. If possible, you can get it. If not possible, we want you to work within the time frame given. But if you are going to get the benefit of some exemption, we expect you to show better faith and cut back on the number of people that you have in your plan.
Okay, David, you had a follow-up.
Sorry? You were saying something about the system of passes?
I'm saying that there's a system of passes that we've developed with the Ministry of Innovation, Science and Technology. We have been able to develop a system which uses what are called QR codes. Let the techie people explain what that is. But essentially, a pass, if you're granted an exemption, a pass will be sent to your mobile phone or it will be emailed to your employer so they can print it out and give it to you. It is read by a QR code reader, and all of the police who are going to be on patrol are being provided with these readers so that the police officer, without having to take anything from you, because we still want to minimize touching and so on, they will be able to hold their phone over the code. The data will get sent back to the master computer or whatever it is, and that will verify, yes, this is a legitimate pass issued to John Brown. And with that, they go on the way.
That sounds good. Now, the question of the figures, the trend. When you look at the trend here in Barbados, what is your worry? Because there are days when we will not hear that there has been any increase, like yesterday. But when next we hear,
the numbers seem to jump significantly by our standards. There are people who are listening to this and may be worried about the trend. What are your thoughts on it?
So the number that I gave was different from what was released yesterday. We are at 33. We increased by four. We had three yesterday, and we had four the day before. So on average, we're detecting about three or four new cases a day. We had one day in which we detected eight persons. One day we detected one. And then I think it was one day when we detected zero cases. And this is all over a 12-day period. Because our first case was detected on the 16th, late in the night on the 16th of March, and today is only the 29th. It's very difficult to make an informed assessment about the trend. I would love to be able to say that we are identifying all the cases of COVID-19 in Barbados, but I can't say that. I can't say that. We are only detecting the cases that are presenting to us. So okay, I know it doesn't mean a great level of comfort, but this is what we're struggling with within the Ministry of Health. We're trying to sensitize not only the general public to come forward and call somebody if you have any respiratory symptoms, but we're also asking our colleagues in the private sector to be highly suspicious of COVID-19, know what it looks like, know how it's diagnosed. We want persons to call their regular healthcare provider if they have symptoms so we can start to detect cases. The other thing that we do to detect cases is contact tracing, which is extremely important if we're going to contain this virus.
No chance of ramping up testing?
Okay, I'll get to that shortly. So contact tracing would involve us taking the index case that is before us and getting a detailed history of everything that they did over the last few days, who they came into close contact with, developing a list of all of those persons that they live with and persons they came into close contact with, and then the team goes to those persons and ask questions, confirm that they came into contact with that person, what was the nature of that contact, and how are you feeling. Those persons then go into quarantine if they're asymptomatic. However, if they're symptomatic, we then have a high level of suspicion of COVID-19, and we would test them for COVID-19 as well. You asked a great question. A lot of people are asking about if we're going to ramp up testing. We have ramped up testing. We're now testing in excess of 20 tests a day. We know we need to do more. We are looking to identify an additional center. We do need other doctors out there to either be trained in how to do the nasopharyngeal swab, or if they know how to do it and they've been fitted for the N95 mask, which is a very important aspect of PPE, personal protective equipment, to come forward so we can add them to the roster so we can swab as many people as possible. One of the lessons that we're learning from other countries is test, test, test. We have to put strategies in place to identify as many cases as possible. The earlier you identify a case, the sooner you can render that person not capable of passing on the coronavirus because you can isolate them. So that's a key strategy that we are in the process of implementing. We do have, at this current point in time, a few thousand test kits, or tests rather. We are looking to scale that up dramatically to 50,000 in the first instance and then 100,000. And we're also looking to utilize other technologies that would help us in terms of diagnostic testing.
And who would be eligible for testing apart from those who show symptoms?
So right now we're focusing on those persons who show symptoms. We have done some testing on persons who are asymptomatic because we had reason to believe that the contact with the index case was of such a nature that this person could possibly have it but not showing symptoms. But we haven't detected a case of COVID-19 in somebody who's asymptomatic as yet.
Okay,
Have a specific set of criteria in mind. And let me stress that the criteria that we had 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago, has changed from what we do now. We have to be responsive. We have to be dynamic. We have to pay close attention to what we're seeing happening. And if we need to change the testing criteria for whatever reason, we would do it.
All right, thank you. 12 minutes afternoon. This is Brass Tack Sunday with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas, 425-2000, or Lowlands Christ Church, 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Just gone 13 minutes after 12. Remember, we break for the 12:30 news at 12:30. Those on the line, I'll ask you to speak to the producer when we break, because you could either hold or you could get the producer to call you back. Let's get some more calls in and get some more questions answered. Brass Tack Sunday, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon to the panel. I'm calling on behalf of the funeral sector. We have been given exemptions for funerals, but I'm calling to find out about our workers, because we, as funeral directors, we employ a large part of the repair sector because we store bodies and our fridges in case they break. And we want to know if we can call out our technicians. And we also want to know about caskets in terms of the oversized casket. Sometimes we have bodies that do not fit the standard casket we have in storage, and we rely on our builders to build oversized for us. And the body harbor is closed. We do not have the materials to build the oversized caskets. So what would you all recommend for the funeral sector in terms of storage? Can we call out our technicians if our fridges fail? And in terms of the oversized body where the casket has to be built, when there's none in stock, what do we do there? Do we encourage the family to hold on until the time has passed? Or do we, what do we do? Because we need to know what do we do in the funeral sector. Although we have been given a pass in terms of bodies and storage and burials of persons that are not the standard size for caskets that are readily available, we would like to know what we would have to do. And in terms of viewings, we have seen that funerals have been down to 10 mourners plus the staff, but we still have viewings. Would you recommend that we have no viewings at all, or do you recommend that we do a pass-through where persons are allowed maybe a minute or so in the viewing of the chapel? I would listen for your reply. Thank you very much, panel.
Thank you.
If I can go first, I'll let Anton talk about the pass-through and things of that sort, because he'd be best able to talk about the risk. One of the exemptions is the removal, handling, or burial of the deceased person. Now, this is a very sensitive issue. Let me say that if a funeral home must operate, if you have your own personnel, then there's no objection at all to those personnel coming to fix your technicians to come and repair your freezer. On the other hand, if you need to get somebody from outside to do it, that person's gonna have to get an exemption. Now let me make it clear. Now we don't anticipate that your freezers will break down every day. And our position is that we're an enterprise is a vital component to an essential sector, that we will at some point in time have to grant exemptions. So you speak about your freezers, somebody else may speak about the supermarket freezers. The concept is the same, and therefore we will grant exemptions in cases of emergency. So, you know, that I don't think that you need to despair. And in a situation where that happens, the technician who is called out can communicate with us and get an exemption.
Mm-hmm. The second part about the viewing as well, if when Anton, you respond, you could add to that.
Sure. So So we were approached about 3 weeks ago by, I believe it's the Barbados Association of Funeral Directors, as to what special considerations need to be on the table when you're dealing with persons who've died from COVID-19. The response that we gave was some direction from PAHO. So PAHO put out, this is the Pan American Health Organization, they put out some guidance on the 18th of March. And in essence, what they're saying is that there's still some uncertainty about what we in healthcare call the natural history of COVID-19 in terms of its ability to be aerosolized. We acknowledge that, but in terms of having a definitive understanding of how long it lasts, for instance, we're still uncertain. So they recommended standard precautions plus the use of personal protective equipment. So right now, they're suggesting that you be just extra cautious when it comes to the management of the dead person. And this is advice to death care workers. With regards to the viewing of the body, we have to be cognizant that it's a cultural consideration, but we also have to be cognizant that this person is dying from an infectious disease, of which we know a lot, but we don't know everything. So in my personal view, I would recommend after the body has been prepared by the funeral home, that there be no open casket viewing. But this is a conversation that is evolving based on the evidence. And as I said, PAHO only just put out guidelines 2 weeks ago, and they will be updating the guidelines as more data comes in as to how best to manage bodies.
Okay, I think that's sufficient. Brastat Sunday, good morning, you're on the air. Let's take the next call. Hello? You're on the air? Okay. Brastat Sunday, good morning and good afternoon and welcome. Good afternoon and welcome. Okay. Good afternoon and welcome. You're on the air. Hello. Brastat Sunday, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to know if government day nurseries are one of the services that are included that you definitely have to go to work.
Let me say that private day nurseries fall within the definition of businesses, and therefore it is expected that they would be closed. We're trying to treat all businesses on the same basis. And the government day nursery, I'm waiting for a further set of dialogue with the Ministry of People Empowerment and Other Affairs. But I think that we will be going in the direction of having government day nurseries close. We anticipate that it would not create as much hardship as in normal circumstances, because with most businesses in Barbados being closed, the requirement really to have the children to their nursery would be less. But the fact is that always operating on the basis that we want to follow the overriding objective of minimizing human contact, I don't think that that we would want to allow government day nurseries to be open while private day nurseries are closed. And I can say that I have received no requests from any private day nursery for an exemption.
All right, thank you. Brastat Sunday, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, by touching money can help spread virus, and also if you in a room that have AC, that could also help spread it also.
Dr. Bess?
If I may. So touching anything that has been touched by a person who has COVID does increase the likelihood of the person who is negative contracting it. And that is why there's a tremendous amount of emphasis on hand hygiene. So you should be washing your hands frequently with soap and water. You should be using alcohol-based hand sanitizers. You should also practice other aspects of hygiene, such as not touching your face. That is how we get COVID. We touch dirty surfaces. We then take our hands unknowingly, unwittingly, and touch our mouth or nose or eyes. And that's how the microbe is able to get in and start its damage once it gets into our system. So theoretically, touching money is a way in which it can be passed. So the standard precautions, as I just mentioned, are what I'm recommending. In terms of the use of AC, what is recommended for persons who, especially for persons who are in home quarantine or home isolation, is that you should be in places that are well ventilated. And well ventilated in our context means open windows, open doors. You are going to reduce the likelihood of circulating pathogens, and you're going to get a high throughput of air, greater volume to disperse any pathogens that might be coming off of a person who has COVID.
All right. Thank you, sir. We're trying to take as many calls between now and the latest, and then I'll get to the WhatsApps. During the news, I'll try to put all the similar ones together and put them into a few questions. So let's go again. Brass Stats, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, panel.
Hi, thank. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead with your question, ma'am.
Yeah. Well, I have three questions. I would like to wish the Prime Minister well, right? And I have three questions for you. In relation to international trade law, what provisions will be made? In the future for some event like this happening again?
Let me say that I'm not an international trade law specialist, but I don't know specifically what kind of events you're thinking of. Global pandemics are things that happen, or as you can see very quickly, we've had H1N1, we've had SARS, we've had many other pandemics before. On this occasion, it's COVID. It has been spreading very quickly, I think, Anton, since December last year. So I don't know that there's a specific international trade law issue that would arise. I think that there are trade law issues that arise because obviously there are companies that are not going to be able to fulfill their contracts. So a supplier in China may not be able to supply his market in the U.S. simply because air traffic and shipping is down. So this has thrown up an awful lot of legal discussion, but I don't know that there's a specific international trade law issue that we can reach an agreement over because of COVID.
Mm-hmm. All right, ma'am.
What I can say, AG, if I may, is that we have something called international health regulations, which is, as I understand it, legally binding international law, 2007, that all countries have signed on to. So even though it's not trade, it takes trade into consideration. And essentially, the spirit of that law is that all countries have a duty to prevent and control the spread of communicable diseases. So you're looking to control the spread of communicable diseases within your country and in other countries as well. So it takes border security into consideration. And what I can say is that all of the decisions that we have made in Barbados have taken international health regulations into consideration in order to reduce the spread of COVID-19 as well as other diseases.
Okay, good. Thank you. Brass, that Sunday, we are heading towards the latest, so I'll just use this time to pull out a few quick WhatsApps that came in. There's someone asking about feed. I have two containers of feed. They're perishable, and this is to support farming. Will these containers be able to be cleared?
There are two things here. First of all, feed manufacturers, feed distributors are going to be vital to the farming sector continuing. We've made a special exemption for farms, and we're even allowing farms to operate from as early as 5 in the morning, whether that's livestock or vegetables or whatever it is. It is inconceivable that we could ask for farming to continue. It's inconceivable that we could ask Barbados and Barbadians to move towards self-sufficiency in agriculture just in case this COVID continues to get worse, while at the same time not giving exemptions to feed producers and feed distributors. I have received some requests for exemption, and it is proposed that I would grant those exemptions. Now, in relation to clearing of things out of the port, which is really the second part of that question. Again, our focus is on those things that support our vital interests at this point in time. Medication, food. So if a person has containers to be cleared and those containers are of animal feed, then the entities that would participate in that process, customs brokers, truckers, whatever it is, would be able to receive the exemption limited to that purpose so long as they request.
Okay, sounds reasonable. You're listening to Brass Tacks Sunday. We are on the air with Attorney General Dale Marshall, COVID Czar Richard Carter, and Chief Medical Officer Anton Best. I'm your host, and this is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing material.
For building supplies, big or small, at Brilliant Metals we have it all. At Brilliant Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
It's just gone 20 minutes before 1 o'clock. You're listening to Brass Tacks Sunday with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated. I'm your host, Corey Lane. On the line, we have Attorney General Dale Marshall, COVID Czar, Mr. Richard Carter, and Dr. Anton Best, Chief Medical Officer, to answer all your calls and queries re-COVID-19 and the national response to this pandemic. Now, before we went on the break, we were asking a number of questions, and one of the questions that continue to arise here on the WhatsApp and the other platforms we're using is about the response of those who are at home, the elderly, etc. And we have COVID Czar, Mr. Richard Carter. I want him to lay out government's plan and response in relation to the vulnerable communities among us. Mr. Richard Carter, are you with us?
Yes. So, Corey, I just wanted to take this opportunity to ensure that persons are aware of the range of responses beyond the medical that the government of Barbados is taking in relation to COVID-19. The Prime Minister would have announced the Adopt Our Families program, where persons of high net worth or above average net worth have been invited to come forward to support vulnerable families based on the understanding that persons who are vulnerable, their vulnerability extends to us in a situation where we have a disease that basically is not discriminating. We have set up a WhatsApp number to receive indications of interest in supporting vulnerable families. So this is for persons who want to come forward and support vulnerable families. You can WhatsApp your interest in doing so to 255-1000, 255-1000. A second program that I want to just give quick mention of is the Vulnerable Household Support Program. Now, we are very fortunate in Barbados that we have a social protection system that essentially has kicked into gear and, in fact, is the envy of many countries in the world. We were able to go immediately to a list of vulnerable households that had been created by the Ministry of People's Empowerment and Elder Affairs. We are currently in the process of expanding that list with a view to meet the proposal of the government of Barbados to identify the 1,500 most vulnerable families in the country and provide them with a monthly program of support that will allow them to ride out the crisis and so that their vulnerability, as I said, does not exacerbate the situation that we are currently trying to manage. Our intention is to roll out that program within the next week or so. We are in the process of finalizing the list of vulnerable households. Let me just say that for those persons who consider that their circumstances are so dire, persons who are in extreme poverty and think that they really need to get the assistance of the government, I am asking those persons to call the hotline number of the Ministry of People Empowerment and Elder Affairs, 536, or rather to WhatsApp, the Ministry of People Empowerment and Elder Affairs, 536-HOPE. Send a WhatsApp message to 536-4673. Your your message will be logged, and one of the welfare officers who deals with these matters will be in touch with you to ensure that your circumstances are investigated. The last thing I wanted to say, Corey, is in respect of our 70-plus population. Now, we've been saying all along in the COVID-19 response, we've been talking about the especial vulnerability of elderly persons. They are more likely, if they get infected by COVID-19, to have adverse outcomes or to require extensive medical intervention. One of the things that the government of Barbados has determined that we will do is to reach out to those persons who are 70 years and over across the island with a view to identifying those persons who need help either in purchasing their groceries because they have no one living in the household or because they have no one that they can call on to do those things, or with a view to helping them to access and purchase their medications, because our ultimate objective in this is to protect that vulnerable sector of the population from exposure to the basic, the rest of the public. And in this regard, therefore, persons 70 years and over can expect over the next week or so a call from the government of Barbados officials. They will identify themselves as such with a view to trying to determine if you need extra help in purchasing those items and in protecting and allowing that segment of the population to remain at home.
Okay, and anyone have any further questions can ask follow-up, and I'm sure you'll be able to answer in relation to that. Before we go back to the lines, just to get some of the questions I pull off of the WhatsApp and put them together, are there any parts or plans to close the airport at any time? Does Stage 3 have any plans to shut the airport at any time?
At this time, there are no plans to close the airport. We've always maintained the stance that we will keep our borders open, and that is going to continue. I can tell you that even now, individuals are reaching out to us in relation to shipments of food and medical supplies that are much needed. The hospital has quite a bit of stuff on order. The Barbados Drug Service has quite a bit of stuff on order. And some of these things are going to have to be brought in by air, others by sea. Barbados needs to be open, and so there's no plan for us to close the airport or seaport at this time.
Okay, good. In terms of the cases, are wondering if we have any recovered cases or any persons doing well so far? How are the 33 confirmed cases doing?
So out of the 33 confirmed cases, all are in isolation, and the vast majority of them are mild, and some are what I would consider moderate, and that we're keeping our eyes on very closely with a guarded optimism.
Anyone towards recovery?
In terms of recovery, it's way too early. Not even two full weeks, having our very first case.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Right. Yeah. So we're not even 2 weeks into the start of this epidemic. We have tested people who have recovered in terms of their symptoms, but when we retested them, they're still showing positive. So only when that test that we use for diagnosis turns up negative can we say that that person has definitively recovered.
Okay. Any plans to announce the places? We don't want names. We want to know if we can announce the places where the confirmed cases have been.
Anton, let me jump in here.
Sure.
Because we have had what I consider an unhealthy curiosity among Barbadians in relation to trying to identify individuals, trying to identify places, trying to identify all manner of things. And my question back to persons who will want that information is, of what value is that to you? How will that help you improve your hand hygiene, improve your respiratory hygiene, improve your requirement to remain in your home? And the second thing is that we have an absolute requirement to protect patient confidentiality. And we know how small Barbados is, and releasing even things such as the locations will go some way to helping people to identify individuals and begin the unhealthy finger pointing. The third thing is that protection of the identity of persons who we are treating is not only important from a patient confidentiality point of view, but we want to avoid the stigmatism that will almost inevitably attach itself to the identification of persons and potentially drive the persons underground that we desperately want to reach. So for all of those reasons, there is no intent to reveal any more information to the public that would be helpful to them.
Let me just add that if we get into the habit of revealing too much information, it could also impair our contact tracing efforts. So we have gotten a lot of calls about, you know, where people live and, you know, where did the people work and all of that. We have to be very careful. Us working in health and the public health teams, especially who are on the ground doing a lot of the very laborious work, they need to know that information. If we put that information in the public domain, there can be more panic than is necessary, and it could actually impair what it is that we're trying to do as we try to identify persons who are at risk and try to contain the spread of COVID-19.
For me, I've told persons personally, and the argument really is that persons' confidentiality should not trump national health security. But what I've been telling persons is that assume they've been everywhere and keep your hygiene at the best practice level, full stop. I think that's the best way to operate in these times. All right. In heat, a lot of speculation about heat and how heat treats the virus. Let's deal with that frontally. Does heat kill the virus? Does heat have any effect on the virus?
So, Corey, I'm going to answer that in two ways. A lot of people have been wondering about COVID-19 in tropical countries because there was a theory initially that it's not going to spread as much in tropical countries. And what WHO said is, well, look at your Singapore example, where Singapore is considered tropical, and it was spreading there. But they were, however, able to contain it. We're only 4 months into this, what started off as an epidemic in Asia, which is now a pandemic. There's still a lot that we're going to learn, still a lot that we need to learn. So to make any definitive statements about temperate climates versus tropical climates, we can't at this point. All we can say is that it appears as though the climate does not change the course of the spread of the disease so far. Okay, the other part of the question, or the other question rather, about heat is, yes, high heat can kill a virus. High heat can kill germs. So, for instance, if you are sanitizing in general, you can use boiling water, and I'm not talking specifically for COVID. I'm looking at what you can do to kill germs in general, and that is why you would recommend boiling water or very hot water to be able to clean surfaces in some instances.
All right, a couple more, and then we go back to the lines. What about support services for banks, companies that print statements and checks? Are they exempt?
There are a number of printing companies that have sought exemption. I think I could say that it seems as though most people in Barbados want to keep working.
Industrious nation.
Companies that are doing printing that is vital to the COVID effort are being granted exemptions. So companies that are producing labels for medicine, labels for hand sanitizers, labels for disinfectant, those companies are granted exemptions in certain circumstances. Now, I think you can see the logic behind this, because in terms of medicines, they have to be clearly labeled. To do otherwise would be reckless and irresponsible. In case of disinfectants, hand sanitizers, all of those require proper labeling. And therefore, in those circumstances, yes. But a company that is looking to print checks and looking to print statements and looking to print posters and envelopes and all those kinds of things, it is not business as usual. And therefore, I could see no reason why such a company would be given an exemption to operate. That operation could not easily fit within a description of being in support of our vital interests at this time. And let me say that in most instances where individual entities have requested exemptions, I think I said it before, we have asked them to demonstrate
a clear willingness to cut back on the number of staff that they're going to be using. In some instances, we've been able to get companies to agree to operate with as few as 10% of their normal staffing complement.
All right, we're going to go back to the lines and I'll come back to some more of these. We're trying to do a balancing act here. So let's say a good afternoon and welcome to our next caller. You're on the air.